I'll call the first case of the new year. It is State Department of Employment Training and Rehabilitation versus Sierra Nevada Corporation. Are council ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well. You may approach, and please advise the clerk how much time you want for rebuttal, if any.
I can reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, Mr. Hall, members of the Supreme Court, the issue you have before you today, Dieter believes very strongly, is one of the statutory construction and how our chapter 612, specifically subsection 265, relates, if at all, to the framework in the NRS 239 public records request and public records section of the NRS. And this is because, to start out with, there's an exemption in NRS 239.010 that specifically states that NRS 612.265 is exempt and goes on to state that they can only get the public records as a matter as pertinent to the law. And our argument from the beginning has been that these records were exempt under 265, specifically subsections 1, 2, 13, and 14. And why do I bring up 13?
Before you do, you didn't argue subsections 13 and 14 to the district court, so why should we consider them if it wasn't raised to the district court?
And Judge Silver, I knew that issue was coming up. It's always hard to argue something where you weren't the briefer below, but here's what I would argue with that is there's a difference, as we've laid out in the reply brief, between a waiver and a forfeiture. And in this case, we didn't affirmatively relinquish any right. And it was done I would argue it was error on the behalf of my predecessor. But here's the problem with that. If you say we waived it, I understand that. But it is not us that you'll be hurting if a waiver is found. And that's because this request itself asked for records that are proprietary in nature, that include taxes and payroll information of businesses that are not SNC. In sections 9 and 12, I believe it was 9 and 12 or 9 and 13, they asked specifically for audits of other brothels. Here's the problem if you're going to find that this was waived, because we have a statutory requirement to keep these things safe from the public because of the proprietary information. It's a gross misdemeanor to let them out for any unauthorized purpose. If this is waived, it is those owners and shareholders in those brothels that will be hurt because it is their tax information. In some cases, it's their payroll information. When we look at these audits are done specifically to see if they're complying with the tax statutes and whether the issue that is at issue with us and SNC, which will be determined down the road by a 612 administrative law judge, which we call an appeals referee, and possibly the board and possibly another district court review, is, are there employees, and I use the air quotes because the definition of employee and the definition of contractor are usually the question, and that was the question in this case. There is numerous pieces of proprietary data that they're required to give us by law that would go out if we were found to have waived this privilege.
Jordan, I understand your argument about the consequences of the waiver. What do you think the remedy should be where the government is obligated to respond to a request and identify appropriately a statute that covers confidentiality and either fails to cite the statute or the correct subsections of the statute?
And again, I think I'm in an unfortunate situation, but I knew this question was coming, Justice Hardesty. I think the main thing you have to do if you're going to make a rule about what happens when a government lawyer or government entity botches a request or botches a response is this: you can't hurt those that weren't involved, has to be rule number one. And what I mean by that is, what if this had happened at the tax department? What if this had happened at the state public defender's office? The state public defender fails to respond. Technically, this could be a waiver under this case if it's published and says it's a waiver.
No, I understand that's kind of a repetition of the previous argument you made.
Right.
I'm asking you what you think this court should consider as an appropriate remedy if it isn't the requirement of disclosure of otherwise statutorily protected information. The seems like the requester, for example, has gone to some effort to try to get it right, and we end up in front of the Supreme Court. They've incurred significant legal fees. Should we consider as a remedy the imposition of fees and costs as a result of that?
I think that would be on the table, Your Honor. And for that, you know, if we were found to have botched the response, I absolutely think that would be in play because the statute already calls for it if they're successful. I think the bigger issue is when you go back down, do we get to reassert that and litigate those privileges or confidentiality? Because the issue is if the confidentiality goes out the door, the damage is already done. The fees and costs, absolutely they would be on the table. I can't argue that it wouldn't be because they're already there.
Are there some matters in their request that fall outside the statute in your view or the subsections of the statute? Or is everything that they asked for protected by that statute or one of its subsections?
Our position, and it would be my view, that if there is something that is outside the statute, it would be a small smidgen of documents that appear to be emails between our own employees. And those are even arguable because they were done directly for the audit. Everything else, I would argue, is absolutely 612 material and absolutely unavailable to the public under 1, 2, and 14. Without those little emails between the workers, which this was never gone in, and there are numerous reasons for that, I assume, but the issue here would be I don't believe that they get very much if they get anything at all, and we would take the position that it is all privileged and confidential under the statute because it's a statutory exemption, and that 14 in particular covers communications within the division as to rulings and as to actions made. Now, if you were to say, well, isn't that your privilege to hold and you waive that, we would live with that. What I would argue is that we can't let out the proprietary data and tax information of these other brothels. So if that means us falling on the sword today and saying we'd have to give up some of it if it was attorney-client privilege or deliberative process privilege, we might have to take that position. The issue that I see is that the main crux of this, they already got in that they got the audit file. The second part of it is directly to whether the ALJ will let them have over the normal audit file or not. And the third go directly to other businesses, which we would absolutely object to and fight tooth and nail because we're not allowed to give that up under any circumstances to some outside party.
Then what does subsection 2 mean and when does it apply?
And that was where I was hoping to start today, so I'll start in with that. I think what happened here is that the judge let them have the access and the framework and got it both ways because our position from the beginning was this. If it's a 612 proceeding, then the 612 statutes control. If it's a separate 239 proceeding, which respondent has actually argued in their briefing and below, then our argument was that 612 subsection 2, the reason the district court got this analysis wrong is they didn't look at the second sentence. The second sentence of subsection 2 says a claimant or an employing unit is not entitled to information from the records of the division for any other purpose.
Right.
Now imagine that.
Are they asking for them to use in the litigation against the state?
That was what they claimed, and then later they flip-flopped and said we were looking to root out corruption in Dieter's audits. But what I was arguing is it's a subtle distinction, but it is a distinction. And what I mean by that is this. You got the 612 proceeding. Under the NAC, all of the 612 proceedings are confidential. So when you're reading this statute to determine what it really means, you have to look at the context of they're not entitled to that unless they're a claimant in the proceeding. We gave them what we would normally give them in the proceeding, but the proceeding is controlled by the statutes for the proceeding because they are more specific. And it says you must wait for the record to be set by what we call the appeals referee or what other people would call the administrative law judge.
Do you consider them to be the claimant in the other pending proceeding?
They are.
Okay,
there's no doubt about that.
Okay,
but my argument is also, and the way you characterize that statement, Justice Kadish, is just what I've been trying to say is this. If it's another proceeding, it's for a different purpose. If this is a separate and distinct proceeding, it's for a different purpose. So if 239 proceedings are separate and distinct, then subsection 2 says a claimant or employing unit is not entitled to the records for any other purpose. So if there's a distinction, which we believe we've made from the beginning, that 239 is not a 612 proceeding, the answer from the district court should have been you don't get them under subsection 2, sentence 2. And that's why it became so important that we handled this in the district court and asserted those privileges, because that was the actual, in the view of Dieter, the actual answer to what the statute said. With that, I'll reserve till rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court and counsel. I'd like to begin with a broad observation. And we saw an example of what was happening here. Their arguments are all made in these very broad, sweeping terms, and they don't capture actually getting into the meat of the language. And that's one of the major problems that the district court had below. Now they are finally fleshing out some arguments, and we just heard new arguments for the first time here in oral argument regarding tax records, which were never raised once before, not once. This is one of the problems we're facing here. Your Honors, I will start with addressing the confidentiality issue. But the confidentiality issue, as I believe, really requires them to go through three things before they can have the underlying order overturned. The first is they've got to get past the waiver, where they failed within 5 days, as is required by the statute, to state the fact that they were objecting based upon confidentiality. They didn't do that. They've got to get past that. Second, if they get past that, they now have to get into the meat of 612-265 and whether or not those exemptions create a confidentiality in this case. Third, even if they do, they still have to get past the hurdle, which they only addressed in their reply brief to this court, that redaction can't solve the confidentiality issues, which they
Let me ask you this. If there's a provision, a statute, that makes these exempt, why do they have to get past your first argument? You say they waive the confidentiality, but there's express statutory provision. Yep. How do you reconcile it?
Your Honor, I think it's reconciled by looking back at the statutory construction or in the statutory structure. 239.107 specifically says they have four things that they can do in response within 5 days. The fourth one, subsection D, says if they're going to say confidentiality, they have to say it at that point, and they have to state the authority that that's based on. This court reaffirmed that concept in Gibbons, made it very clear that they have to do that. They failed to do it. They didn't raise confidentiality until much later, and that has been waived. They have to comply with the statute. That's why I put forth waiver as the very first thing. 5 days in, they've got a choice. They made their choice, and they failed to live up to the statute.
Well, Mr. Hall, to follow up on Justice Perry-Gary's question, the statutory construct for records that are public and records that are confidential is pretty clear. Generally speaking, the records are public, and then there are a whole series of exceptions, as you know, one of which is the statute at question. Can a public agency, through its oversight or maybe even purposeful, in its response, waive a statute that expressly protects those documents? Those exceptions were inserted into the statutory construct with a legislative purpose, and it concerns me that a public agency, in not responding appropriately to a request, would waive all of the policy issues that went into declaring those records confidential.
Your Honor, I can address that in a couple of ways. The first is that this is an overstatement. It's back to the broad brush arguments. In fact, what the district court ordered, if you look at the appellate's appendix at 275, the district court specifically said they are to produce the records requested. If you then go to the records requested, which is 63 of the appendix, the request specifically limited it to not including the confidential information that is listed in 265. it specifically said redact the confidential information that would be identifying information for an employing unit or for a claimant. In other words, this argument is a red herring. We didn't ask for, nor were they ordered, to produce the confidential records that are here. We looked at the statute. We knew 265 may apply. We specifically tailored the request not to include the records that it made confidential.
So it, is it your position that all of the Chapter 612 records, other than what would reveal their identities, the person or employing unit's identity, all of those other than that are public records under the Public Records Act?
I believe so, Your Honor. That's the only citation.
And if they are, then why do we need subsection 2 and why is it there? Because if anyone can get them with those redactions, what additional is being provided by 2?
Your Honor, I would go back to the legislative history and timing. Subsection 2 pre-exists the public records statute and the addition of 265. And so part of it was this was explicitly giving claimants a right to obtain discovery and obtain records during the course of their defense of a claim involving unemployment. And so that was specifically created as a right under that statute. The Public Records Act comes along and clearly broadens that right. What we have is two rights that run parallel, and they're not exactly the same. What we then have to look at is what are the limitations, the specific confidentiality required by 265. And 265, the only thing cited so far is regarding the identifying information of a claimant or employing unit.
So your position, I just want to be clear, is that anyone, not just your client who happens to be involved in this other litigation about its status or its worker status, anybody could make a public records request and get everything they have, save and except for redactions of their identification information?
No, Your Honor. They could timely object based upon non-statutory privileges. For example, privacy privilege that we would then engage in the balancing test of, and we would examine those. They specifically asserted multiple times that there is no other scope of privilege that they're asserting and no balancing. Now, for the first time in oral argument, they're raising new records to which there is no statutory protection to which we would apply the balancing test. This is too little too late. They've waived all of those arguments and are now attempting to assert them for the first time in oral argument. That's completely improper. But, Your Honor, to answer your question directly, that would be the appropriate way to handle it.
Right.
If they believed that it was that certain records were protected not statutorily but were private or otherwise protected by privilege within the 5 days, they would state that in their initial response, and that's what's required by this court's jurisprudence on this issue as well as the statutory response.
So the statutory confidentiality, though, in your view, is limited to just the identifying information?
Yeah. Okay. There's two scopes of protection, and the statute specifically says it. It lists all the statutes and then goes on to say any other right protected by law, which would include privileges, which would include privacy, all of those other things. They failed to assert those until far too late, and even as of today, haven't demonstrated with particularity any particular documents to which it would have applied.
Dr. Powell, I want to ask and go back to what you claimed on the district court's order looks like. When we look at the district court order, I mean, I know you say it's back in the record, but the district court order looks like a blanket order to produce all records. It doesn't have anything in the order about redactions at all.
Your Honor,
confidential information.
Your Honor, it specifically says to comply with the request that was made, and that's at lines 16 through 18 of page 275. And that means you then have to look at the request at issue. The request at issue specifically had the redaction limitation. So the court was essentially incorporating the limits because that was not included in the request. So we didn't ask for documents that didn't have that, that had those identifying information. Your Honor, another point I would address with regard to what we're dealing with is the issue of subject matter jurisdiction, if there's no further questions on confidentiality. I think that we have clearly established they waive those. Actually, before I move on to that, I'd like to address redaction. I think that redaction is an important element here that we haven't addressed. The issue of redaction is clearly their burden. They have to show that they couldn't redact these records in such a way that it would prevent or it would still show confidential information. For the first time in the reply brief at this court, they made an argument regarding redaction. It's untimely, but nevertheless, I want to address it. Specifically, they said, well, you can't redact it because someone essentially could figure it out with the records we would produce. They could go out there and in public records, they could figure it out. That's an untimely raised objection, and that is exactly the kind of speculative objection that this court rejected in the Haley case. If the court recalls in the Haley case, they were asking about public records regarding concealed weapon permit holders. And the argument that came up was, well, this could put those people in danger. The court specifically said, look, you didn't establish the record of this at the district court level, and therefore we're rejecting the speculative argument for protection. That's exactly what we have here. There is no underlying record which would establish that a particular record could still lead to the identifying information, even if redacted. As a result, they've utterly failed to meet their requirements to establish that redaction wouldn't be sufficient, especially when the redaction in the request was already to delete out identifying information.
Do you have a record site for the request? Again, I was trying to find it here in our materials.
For where our requests are?
Yes, sir, please.
Your Honor, that appears at Appellant's Appendix 39.
Okay.
Say it one more time. Appellant's Appendix.
Appellant's Appendix, page 39. Right. While we're looking at that, I would point out that the first eight requests have nothing to do with third parties. It's all dealing with requests that have to do with my client, the various processes, internal communications, all of those other things. All of those are not covered by the new arguments that have been made today.
So I don't know if you have the Appendix 39 in front of you, but I'm not sure I read it the same way you're reading it. And I'm especially concerned about your reading of the order, because on page 270, at lines 19 through 21, the court says, the court determines that Dieter has failed to carry its burden to demonstrate that the requested records expressly and unambiguously declared confidential by law. The court's order is saying that 612.265 does not protect any of these records. And yet you're suggesting, by the language of the order and page 275, that if you look at the records request, one would find that indeed you're allowing for some records to be protected. Where in the request do you see that?
In the request, we specifically say we're expressly not seeking the identity of either an employing unit or person from whom Dieter has obtained information. We go on to say, thus, in response to this request, Dieter should redact portions of records which would reveal the identity of another employing unit or person. And so that limitation.
It's the heading on the top, correct?
It's the heading on the top. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So you kind of opened the door to redaction.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
You opened the door to redaction?
Absolutely, Your Honor. We felt that that was appropriate. We recognized that some of the documents we were requesting might include information that would be identifying of a particular employing unit or employee, and that was a narrow scope of the privilege or confidentiality created by 612. As a result, we specifically asked that our request not include identifying information. For them to now say we can't produce it because it includes identifying information completely ignores the scope of the actual request. The request told them not to produce that stuff. The district court agreed with us because we never asked for it. So we have not asked for, nor have they been ordered to produce specifically identifying information.
So does subsection 2 mean anything for you now in terms of, does it mean that you can only request documents in connection with presenting a claim in a proceeding under Chapter 612, you know, and not for any other purpose?
Your Honor, I don't believe it totally limits it because I believe the Public Records Act allows it for other purposes, and yeah. So we can request it outside of that. But even if it were to be interpreted in the fashion your question just applied, every one of these requests is intended for the purpose of presenting it in the defense of the case. We believe, without getting into the underlying substantive defense, every one of these was tailored around responding to the audit findings and presenting our
case. Right, so counsel just argued that, in fact, because you're here in an NPRA proceeding and not a Chapter 612 proceeding, that you're, in fact, seeking them for a different purpose. How do you respond to that?
That's factually inaccurate. In fact, if you look at the actual request we submitted, we told them that the purpose was for using it in the defense of that. Once again, referring back to Exhibit A, we were very careful and specific in our requests and narrowed them for that purpose, realizing that someone might argue the argument you were just presenting on. As a result, we made it very clear our purpose was for that purpose. Now, I believe that NPRA provides an additional purpose for which someone could use it, but I don't believe that issue is before this court right now, or this court doesn't need to get to that issue, because in this case, the request is clearly for purposes of defending a matter under 612. With regard to subject, any further questions on confidentiality? I think that that's an important one. Oh, I'm out of time.
Thank you. Your time is up.
For the record, again, Troy Jordan on behalf of the Employment Security Division. To a certain extent, I would argue that he made some of the arguments Dieter is making, which is this, is they're saying one thing and then asking under a different framework. He continues to say this was only about the 612 proceeding. But as the record is clear, and where I am adamant that the district court got it wrong, is that the district court made a finding that the ALJ denied their subpoenas. That is not the truth. The ALJ didn't actually get to a decision because this action was filed before the pre-hearing conference where the ALJ sets out the record and the discovery. NRS 612 gives that exclusive access to the ALJ to say this is the record in the 612 proceeding.
If the records are subject to the NPRA, then, I mean, if anybody can get them as public records, it couldn't be anybody except them because they're in another proceeding. Is that your position?
That's our position, is that it's statutorily confidential. There's a reason for that, is because the statute is designed to make it so that these documents come out during the proceeding and they stay confidential from the public otherwise. And you've actually addressed subsection 14 in the Circus case, in which you found that and that the privilege was sound because it kept people from suing each other over things that were said during the proceedings.
Circus, wasn't that case also before the amendment adding 239 to this statute? I mean, obviously since 1940, this statute's been amended to include the provision regarding 239.
And I would agree that it predates that, but it also predates the 265 coming in as an exemption.
And who determines under subsection 2, what does proper presentation really mean?
Well, and that, I said, was part of, that's the ALJ, because the ALJ sets the scope of the hearing. And the ALJ says this is about a contractor versus employee issue. That's it. We're not going to hear anything else. If they don't like that, they can get a petition for judicial review later. They can go to our board of review before that. But the issue is they tried to get more documents without going through the discovery process. And then when we said, you're not exhausting your remedies, you're mixing this with a 612 proceeding, these are confidential documents, they said, it's a separate 239 proceeding. And that's why I came over the top of them in argument with, if that's the case, then subsection 2 solves all, because it says you don't get them for another purpose. Although I would agree it's a subtle distinction, and someone may accuse me of splitting hairs, the issue here is this. If you're going to get 612 documents, you get them through the process of a 612 hearing.
But don't we have to decide whether they're public records or not public records? Because if they're public records, whether they're in a 612 proceeding or not, they're entitled to them, as would anybody else be, if they're public records. I mean, isn't that the core question?
I think that's part of the core question, but in this particular case, none of them were public records. That's what we're trying to say.
Well, right. That's the gist of the argument, because if they're public records...
If they're public records, anybody can get them. But
right.
That was the whole point, as you tried to make, I believe, earlier, Justice Kadish, is this. There's no reason for subsection 2 if they're not confidential by statute. Further, I would argue that if you look at the request itself, where he's arguing today, he's saying, look, we asked not to give you the identity. We asked for this. We asked for that. They had to have done that in direct response, trying to get around those privileges and around that confidentiality, because there's no other reason to form it that way. They saw this coming. The issue was that they tried to mix it. For some reason, they didn't want to go to the ALJ. I don't know what that is. I'm not going to speculate as to that. But the ALJ never actually weighed in. They hit us with a 239 request, and here we stand. And the 239 request to me should have been not well taken due to the second sentence in subsection 2, where it says they don't get it for another purpose.
That's a claimant or an employee unit, not a person who's requesting it under the Public Records Act.
But I don't think you can ignore the confidentiality that said if it's a 612-265 proceeding, if it's a 612-265 document, it's exempt from 239.
Yeah.
So you start off with it being exempt, and then you look at, does it apply under 265? And I would put it to you that the argument from the beginning and the reality of it is the Employment Security Division doesn't do anything but 612 proceedings. That's all we do. So all of these documents are going to fall under that necessarily.
Thank you. I want to thank both counsel for their arguments and their briefs, which were excellent. This matter will be submitted, and we will be in recess until the further call of the court.